Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Here's a scenario many parents will recognize. You drop off your child at school and get a call a half hour later that she forgot her lunch, and then you spot her homework still at home on the counter again. Well, do not despair, says developmental pediatrician Damon Korb. His new book is Raising an Organized Child. It's just out, published by the American Academy of Pediatrics. He is in Stanford, California. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. It's great to be here.
So you approach this from a neurodevelopmental perspective. What does that look like?
Well, the brain does many important things in order for us to be able to plan and organize. And I'm trying to teach parents how to build those brain muscles that allow you to entertain and think about multiple things at the same time.
Is this necessarily a clinical problem, though, or just something that happens to drive parents berserk when their kids forget things?
I would say it two different ways. We are seeing a tremendous increase in the number of young adults that aren't adulting. And I believe that's because they haven't developed the organizational problem skills that they need to become independent. And at the same time, I've been working with kids with all kinds of issues for 20 years, no matter what they come in for. If the things that drive parents bonkers are the organizational issues.
Talk about raising an organized child. As you say, it's not just about having a neat room or remembering to bring in your homework. It's about rewiring kids' way of thinking, creating a brain circuitry that kids will need to thrive. Describe it.
So it certainly includes finding two socks that match. But what I'm trying to teach is that organized thinking is what's important. Being able to grasp the big picture, to show insight, to take perspective.
I do want to say matching socks are completely overrated, but when it gets back to changing the brain circuitry, how do you do that, say, for a 4-year-old versus a 14-year-old?
What I've done is I've narrowed down the steps that parents need to take down to 5 steps, and that's be consistent, introduce order, give everything a place, practice forward thinking, promote problem solving. From every age, whether if it's an infant, a toddler, a preschooler, a school-age child, or a teenager.
How do you mean infancy? What would you do with a baby?
So even infants are learning order. The very first order they get is when they cry, you pick them up. And that cause and effect relationship works so well when done consistently that by the time they're 6 months old, they understand how to play with some cause and effect toys.
So how about a few years later when a child is a toddler?
Toddlers are explorers, and exploration is great. We learn from exploration. They get themselves into trouble, and they figure their way out of it. The safety comes with consistency. We don't walk across the street without holding my hand. Every time we come near the street, I'm going to hold your hand. We also use language that has to do with order. The prepositions that kids learn by the time they're 4, over, under, below, beneath, beside, between, talk about space. During, after, before, those talk about order. One of the points I make in this book is that children progress at their own level. And one of the reasons I wrote this book from infancy to teenage years is to help parents recognize where their child's organizational abilities are. If they have a 13-year-old whose organizational skills are that of a 7-year-old, then it's really frustrating for that 13-year-old to be held to 13-year-old expectations for organization. Parents need to back up and push them at the level their child's at so that they can move forward with confidence.
You write about a boy named Alex who lost one jacket after another in a lunchbox just weeks into school. And I think that scenario will sound very familiar to a lot of parents.
There are a lot of boys named Alex.
Yep. Exactly, yeah. And so what do you do in a case like that?
So with Alex, what we did is we solved one problem at a time, jackets. What we said is, when you came home, this is where you hang your jacket. It goes on this spot every single time. And in fact, we tied a little string across the doorway to the next room. So if he tried to leave that entrance hall without hanging his jacket, he had a little reminder there. We came up with a similar strategy at school. So his jacket always went in one place. Then we moved on to shoes with Alex. And then ultimately, we got him a bright yellow folder because Alex hated yellow. So I got him a bright yellow folder to put his homework in.
That's cool.
And, And it's cruel, but he thought it was funny. And so what happened, because he thought it was funny, it was memorable. And every time he saw that bright yellow folder in his backpack, he goes, oh, my homework goes in here.
What about the idea that, you know, life would like to always be organized and predictable and consistent, and it isn't. And that you don't want kids to freak out or panic when they see something they're not accustomed to seeing.
We have to pick where we want to be consistent and where we're not to be consistent. So, for instance, when our children were really young, and we have five of them, we had a bedtime. At the same time, my wife and I were remarkably busy, and we'd have these late night meetings, and we'd bring our kids with us because at that time we couldn't afford babysitting. And when 8 o'clock came, we'd stick them in the corner of the restaurant with a little blanket and a pillow, and they'd have to lay down because we were reinforcing that it was important for them to go to bed at a bedtime. At the same time, we were teaching them to be flexible about where they could sleep. So we introduce flexibility, but we do that in a structured way.
What happened to the structure for your kids when they became teenagers, or for patients who you see as they become teenagers, because they may not be as organized as they want to be, but they also may be resistant to parents who are trying to get them to be more responsible?
The consistent foundation that you set up when they're young really pays dividends when they become teens. Yeah, of course, a little bit of rebellion is expected for teenagers, and we want them to push those limits. But then we're there to just kind of give them feedback. I have a rule with sleepovers with my kids. You're welcome to go to sleepovers whenever you want, but you can't come home the next day and be a jerk. If you're a jerk to me the next day, we're not going to do sleepovers because it tells me you're not ready for those sleepovers. So I give them the limits and the boundaries, but I let them have the freedom within those boundaries.
Young people who use technology are likely accustomed to having competing demands for their immediate attention. Have you found that over time this helps young people become more organized in their behavior because they have to parse out these different priorities, or less?
Less in most instances. I think there's something very valuable about being bored. Boredom is one of the great problems we have to solve as a kid. And these days, we default to our electronics. We never have to solve the problem of boredom. The other thing that's important to remember is play. And creativity is a great way to learn how to be organized. What would I do if I was a cowboy in this situation? What would I do if I was a teacher in this situation? And when we're playing these electronics, the creative people are the people who designed it. Our job is to passively follow a path, and it takes away that creative, divergent thinking that's really valuable for organizational development.
How much do you think technology is responsible for the fact that you say you're seeing more problems with organization among young people and more adolescents who don't seem to be developing as much? And even beyond technology, what is it?
So I don't think it's possible to blame it on any one thing, but technology doesn't help. I think we have overprotective parents who are afraid of their children failing and struggling, and so they try to solve those problems for them. My kids play a lot of sports, and one of the problems we occasionally have is a coach isn't giving my child the amount of playing time that my child, and usually I, believe they deserve. And in that instance, I have a choice as a parent. I can go to the coach and complain, or I can say to my child, yeah, how are you going to solve this problem? And then it's up to them to figure this out. Because my child's ability to go to the coach and say, what do I have to do to play better, is a skill that's so much more important than a little extra playing time in the fifth grade.
You said toward the beginning of the interview that you're not seeing adolescents develop as many organizational skills and as well as you think they should be or they used to. What's responsible for that?
So I think there's a few important factors. I think the amount of time they're spending on screens, which I consider mental downtime. I think overprotective parents who aren't giving children the opportunity to solve problems. I think the fear that we have of letting our children go outside and explore because of safety issues that exist in society today. As a result, children aren't out there getting into trouble and solving problems on their own like they need to. But I don't think it's ever too late to start helping organize your children or yourselves. And I don't think this needs to be an arduous task. I think it's these five basic steps are what people can use to guide their parenting.
Damon Korb. His new book is called Raising an Organized Child, and it's published by the American Academy of Pediatrics. Nice to speak with you.
It's absolutely wonderful speaking to you.